As I said, we've got a lot to talk about, and if you would open your Bibles and follow along, certainly that would be helpful to me. I've got some charts that I want you to help me prove. Sometimes it's very difficult to prove your own work, and some of these charts get rather difficult during this particular period of time, and I want us to keep our thinking running straight on who is who so we know who we're talking about. In just a moment, you'll see why that's so important. But first, let's talk a little bit about Jehoshaphat. We know that Jehoshaphat was, for the most part, a very good king. In 2 Chronicles chapter 17 through 21, what appears in red up here is the text that we're going to, for the most part, follow. And Chris, is this thing turned on? All right, thank you. Is what we're going to follow. I want you to notice in chapter 17, verse 1, it says, Jehoshaphat, his son, reigned in his stead and strengthened himself against Israel. And he placed forces in all the fortified cities of Judah and set garrisons in the land of Judah and in the cities of Ephraim, which Asa his father had taken. And Jehovah was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the first ways of his father David, and sought not unto the Balaam. That, in a nutshell, tells us that Jehoshaphat was a good king. Now, we've talked about Asa, his father, and we've noted that Asa was, for the most part, a good king. He made some poor choices along the way, and we're going to see that Jehoshaphat certainly does in his alliances with those of the northern 10 tribes who worshipped idols. Now, much to be said about that. But as we look at the text of chapter 17, you'll note that in verse 6, it tells us that his heart was lifted up in the ways of Jehovah. Jehoshaphat desired to do right things. And you'll notice that not only did he set up garrisons, but he set up princes. You'll notice in verse 7, to teach in the cities of Judah. You'll also notice that he set up certain men that were priests in verse 9, and they taught in Judah, having the book of the law of Jehovah with them. And they went about throughout all the cities of Judah and taught among the people. Now, I want to underscore something here in our thinking. When Jehoshaphat realized that those to the north had engaged in the practice of idolatry, and that they've not had one good king, not even from the beginning of the divided kingdom period, what does he do to try to ward off the idolatrous practices from creeping into Judah? It tells us in verse 6 that he took away the high places and the ashram out of Judah. But then what did he do, Randy? You teach the people. That's right. You send teachers out to teach. I want you to think for just a moment that Jehoshaphat, the good king that he was, understood that creating recreational or social activities for the people, that was not going to keep them united as a people. It was not going to keep them faithful unto God. And you can attract people that way, but how do you get commitment from people to God? They have to be taught. Just have to be taught. And Jehoshaphat understood that. The necessity of teaching the people. Question, do you think the people understood the need to be taught? Well, that's kind of a two-way street, isn't it? I mean, you look in the days of Elijah, the prophet, and he was an excellent teacher, but what was the attitude of the majority of the people? They didn't want to be taught. When you look during the days of Jeremiah, Jeremiah was a great prophet, a great outstanding teacher, but what was the attitude of the people? They didn't want to be taught. When he called upon them to seek the old paths, they said, "We will not walk there. We don't want to be taught." Now, Jehoshaphat understands that the loyalty of the people unto God is going to be dependent upon their level of understanding God, who He is, And so send out the teachers among the people to teach the people. In verse 10, it tells us, "And the fear of Jehovah fell upon all the kingdoms of the land that were round about Judah, so that they made no war against Jehoshaphat." When you read about the Philistines and the Arabians, what did they do? In verse 11, they brought tribute to Jehoshaphat. What does that suggest to us? They're afraid of him. They're afraid of God from the perspective of what God can do. And you'll notice in verse 12, it says, "And Jehoshaphat waxed great exceedingly, and he built in Judah castles and cities of store. And he had many works in the cities of Judah, men of war, mighty men of valor in Jerusalem. And this was the numbering of them according to their fathers' houses." And you can read of the multiplied thousands in the next few verses. Jehoshaphat did a lot of good things. In fact, in chapter 18, verse 1, it tells us, "Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and he joined affinity with Ahab." We got a problem. Ahab up here to the north, he has an enemy. The enemy is the king of Syria. And Ramoth-Gilead is a city that Israel thinks is supposed to be theirs. And so Ahab desires of Jehoshaphat to join forces and let's fight against the city of Ramoth-Gilead. Let's take that city. Now in verse 3, it says, "And Ahab, king of Israel, said unto Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, wilt thou go with me to Ramoth-Gilead? And he answered him," now I want you to look at these words carefully because you're going to see them again and again. He said, "I am as thou art, and my people as thy people, and we will be with thee in the war." Who said that? Jehoshaphat. He's making an alliance with Ahab, the king of Israel. Now you remember the name Jeroboam as the first of the kings of the divided kingdom. And from Jeroboam up to this point, we've noted the kings set against the benchmark of Jeroboam. But now to some degree, Ahab becomes a new benchmark of wickedness for the people of Israel. And of all things, Jehoshaphat, one of the good kings in Judah, is making an alliance with Ahab, one of the most wicked kings of the kings of Israel, to go and fight against Ramoth-Gilead. Now, when he joins forces with Ahab, Jehoshaphat begins by asking the question in verse 6, "Is there not here a prophet of Jehovah besides that we may inquire of him?" Now, in our discussion of Ahab, you can't help but have some overlap of these kings because they had relationships, obviously, with each other. When you talk about Ahab, you're going to talk about this deal with Syria. And when you talk about Jehoshaphat, you're going to talk about this deal with Syria. And you can't talk about one without talking about the alliance that was made with the other. So we talk briefly about this point from the standpoint of the kings in our last study. And so we're going to look at the account now in the Chronicles, and you'll see that it's identical, essentially, to that which you read in the account of the kings. But in this text, Jehoshaphat makes inquiry, "Let's inquire of the Lord," verse 4, and see how this thing's going to play out. So all kinds of prophets come, and their word is to Ahab and Jehoshaphat, "The Lord's with you. Go and fight. Come in peace. Everything's good." But Jehoshaphat, after hearing all of these prophets, false prophets, he's not much comforted. And he wants to know, isn't there somebody else that we can inquire of besides these prophets? And as we noted last time, Ahab's response was, David? Yeah, I hate him. And why? Yeah, he tells me things that I really don't like, and so I don't like him. I hate him. Micaiah, as some pronounce that, Micaiah or Micaiah, the son of Emma, you'll see Imla, in verse 7. And so Micaiah tells Jehoshaphat, Micaiah tells Jehoshaphat and Ahab that, no, you're not going to be very successful. Now, we talked about Ahab as Micaiah was first approached. You tell the kings whatever all these other prophets have said so that the message is one message. And he does so. And then we've noted how that Ahab rebuked Micaiah and said, how many times do I have to tell you? You tell me what God says. And he tells him what God says. And then he complains, I don't like that. See, I told you so. He never says anything good about me. And so we read of the warning, Micaiah's warning, in verse 16. It says, I saw all Israel scattered upon the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And Jehovah said, these have no master. Let them return every man to his house in peace. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, did I not tell thee that he would not prophesy good concerning me? And Micaiah said, therefore, hear ye the word of Jehovah. I saw Jehovah sitting upon his throne, and all the host of heaven standing on his right hand and on his left. And Jehovah said, who shall entice Ahab, king of Israel, that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? Now, we know that the arrangements were that a lying spirit would go, and that's represented, I believe, in these false prophets, and tell Jehoshaphat, persuade him to go. Now, what was the purpose? I'm sorry, persuade Ahab to go. And what was the purpose of that? What was to happen to Ahab? He would die. Now, we've talked about that. Let's go back now and talk about Jehoshaphat. The word of this prophet, and I'm not sure why, but nonetheless, Jehoshaphat concedes to go along. We've noted that Ahab makes an arrangement, knowing the words of this prophet, Micaiah, that he's going to die. He thinks he can circumvent that. How's he proposed to circumvent that, John? That didn't work out too good. How did it work out? They washed out the chariot and the dogs licked him up, or licked up the blood, just like the prophet had said that he would. Now, that's Ahab. But let's get back to Jehoshaphat in this picture. When you drop down into the text of chapter 19, we see Jehoshaphat's role in all of this. I want to hold that chart, that one, for just a moment. No, I don't, because I'm going to go on past that, and I don't want to do that. When you look at chapter 19, Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned to his house in peace to Jerusalem. And Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, shouldest thou help the wicked and love them that hate Jehovah? For this thing, wrath is upon thee from before Jehovah. Nevertheless, there are good things found in thee, in that thou hast put away the Ashereth out of the land, and has set thy heart to seek God. Now let me ask you the question, obviously, in the latter part there, verse 2. The question that is asked of Jehoshaphat, how is it that you've become a friend of those who hate God? Now can you do that? What did Jehoshaphat do? We know that Jehu rebukes him for forming this alliance in the first place with Ahab. Is it a legitimate question? Jehoshaphat, what in the world are you doing with Ahab? Why did you form an alliance with Ahab to fight against anybody? But that's what he did. Now, hold that thought, because I want to look just ahead a little bit, and then we're going to spend some time with the account of 1 Chronicles chapter 2. We know that Jehoshaphat, or chapter 20, not only did Jehoshaphat form an alliance with Ahab, but he also formed an alliance with Ahab's son, Ahaziah. The deal here was that they were to make ships. How'd that turn out? They were going to send these ships over here to Tarshish and other places and collect gold and silver and all these things from the nations round about. How'd that turn out? All right, the ships ended up wrecked. Again, here was an alliance that he ought not to have made. And then when Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, was dead, Ahab's other son, Jehoram, becomes king of the northern 10 tribes. And we find that Jehoram, the son of Ahab, now wants to go fight and join forces with Jehoshaphat and subdue the Moabites, which has kind of always been a threat. And so what does Jehoshaphat, how does he respond to that? Well, let's go back to 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings chapter 3, in verse 7. It says, "And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat the king of Judah, saying, The king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses." Does that sound familiar? That's almost the same thing that he said to his father when he made the alliance with Ahab. Yeah, I'll go with you. We'll fight together. I'll be just like you are. Well, was Jehoshaphat just like Ahab? No. Was Jehoshaphat just like Ahaziah? No. Was Jehoshaphat just like Jehoram, the son of Ahab, the brother of Ahaziah in this particular instance? No. Jehoshaphat, as we have read, was a man who wanted to serve God. But making these alliances was a problem. Now let's make an application. Turn over, if you will, to Ephesians in the New Testament. Look at chapter 5, Randy. Begin reading for me at verse 8. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. Well, till I say that's enough. About verse 11, I believe it is. All right, let's pause right there. What kind of life had the Ephesians lived before they became Christians? Keeping in mind that we're talking about primarily those who are of Gentile background. Enslaved to sin. You can begin back in the fourth chapter about verse 17 and begin to read somewhat of a description of what they did in Ephesians chapter 5, beginning, what is it, about verse 3. You see another somewhat of a laundry list of things that the Ephesians did. But now in verses 8 through 11, what kind of relationship were those who had formerly practiced those things to have with those who insist on the continuation of those practices? Don't have any fellowship with that. Don't participate in it. What does that mean? You can't teach a fellow who's a fornicator? Oh, no. No, that's not the point. But you don't make the folks who pursue that lifestyle your best friends. Why not? Yeah, didn't Paul say something to that effect in 1 Corinthians 15:33? Evil companionships corrupt good morals. What did Paul say in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning about verse 14. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14 beginning. And he continues that thought right on down into chapter 7 about verse 2. And he said, come ye out from among them and be ye separate. Separate yourselves from all defilements of the flesh. Now Paul, the same writer, writing to the Romans, said in Romans chapter 13, beginning in verse 11, and this knowing the season, that already it is time for you to awake out of sleep, for now is salvation nearer to us than when we first believed. The night is far spent and the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk becomingly as in the day, not in reveling and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and jealousy, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Does it make a difference who you hold hands with? Is there a lesson, a valued lesson here with the practices of Jehoshaphat? He wants to be a good king. He wants to serve the Lord. But he formed some mighty close relationships with people who did not. Now, is that a good thing? Randy? Well, now, I've asked that question a whole bunch of times regarding certain circumstances of people that have involved themselves in bad things. And I've said, what were they thinking? And the typical response is, they weren't thinking. Jehoshaphat. You'd like to think that, wouldn't you? And you'd think that you would take precautions not to go that direction. But he didn't do that. And the question that Randy asked is good. What was he thinking? I don't know. The text doesn't tell us that he was seeking some kind of reunification of the kingdom, or thinking maybe he could change Ahab's mind or change perhaps. But we've got to keep in mind that during this period of time we see evidence of several countries or cities presenting their soldiers as somewhat mercenaries to fight for whoever would pay them the most money. I don't really think that Jehoshaphat is characterized in that light. Perhaps he sees these people to the north, the Israelites, as his people. They were indeed Hebrews, and perhaps he sees this as my brethren that I need to support in this. I don't know. It's simply not said, except from the standpoint of how he answers the call to join forces. My people are your people. I'll go. Where are you now? Verse 4.
Oh, I'm sorry. Back in 2 Corinthians.
Okay. Well, we've got some problems with that, and I think we need to give some application to that in our thinking. We talk about those of like precious faith, as the Apostle Peter stated in 2 Peter chapter 1, of like precious faith. And what a source of encouragement that is. But what's Jehoshaphat doing? Here's a man who has introduced Baal worship, and of all things has taken to wife Jezebel, such a wicked woman. And Jehoshaphat is interested in pursuing an alliance with this man. You know, I asked a question one time, and you correct me if you think that I'm wrong in this, in my thinking. There was a dear friend of mine, lived at that time in Southern California. He doesn't anymore. But he had a good friend who was a gospel preacher, and to my knowledge, both of them were sound and believed and taught and practiced the truth on what has been characterized as the marriage issue or the marriage question. And about once a year, there was a gathering of preachers to camp out and play golf and sing together and have meals together, and it was a great big thing throughout the state of California. It lasted for about a week, and I never did go. I raised the question, who's teaching your classes while you're up there? And well, some of these folks that were known in California, especially at that time, for teaching error on the question. And I asked my friend, I said, what do you do for the week that you're playing golf and cooking out and you're having these classes and these singings? What do you do during that week with this thing that's a wedge of division, especially in this state among churches? Do you just wave a white flag and say, we don't talk about that this week. We're here to play golf and have a good time. And is that how we handle that? And how do you handle that? Now, I'm not suggesting that we ought not talk with folks that we differ about. I'm not suggesting that we ought to be ugly and that sort of thing. But the thing that concerns me is, how do you just pretend that everything's good? How do you do that? Now, have I missed that somewhere? Does not Jehoshaphat become, and Ezra and the illustration that Chris gave, do these not become some pretty good illustrations of what our attitude ought to be about that kind of thing? Now, I would be wide open for some comments or questions if you don't believe that or you disagree and would like to express that either privately or publicly. I'd be open to that, because I sure don't want to mess up on that. That's important. Well, when the issue of circumcision became a divisive issue, in other words, you have to practice circumcision in order to go to heaven. So that makes it a divisive issue. It's not something we just hold different opinions on, but we're binding that in order to go to heaven. And that drove a wedge of division. In Galatians chapter 2, in verse 5, what was Paul's attitude toward those who were teaching wrongly on that? Galatians 2, verse 5. Not even an hour. To whom we gave place in the way of subjection, no, not for an hour. You see, we can't just let this slide or let this pass. This is dividing the people of God between the Gentile Christians and the Jewish Christians. In other words, we're going to make Gentiles become Jews in order to be Christians. Paul said, we can't tolerate that. That's just wrong. Well, what about the Apostle Peter when he succumbed to that? What did Paul say to him? Yeah. Yeah, let's go have some barbecue and play a game of golf and have a singing and Let's have a Bible study. Of course, we don't talk about that issue of circumcision, but we can talk about other things that might be profitable to us. What do we do with that? Yeah. Well, yeah. I've known folks before, back when debates were being conducted across this country and were very productive and profitable, and people attended in masses to hear the truth. Gospel preachers who were debating with some denominational fella, and strangely enough, someone in the community was hospitable and opened their house to them, and they both stayed under the same roof. That would be an interesting arrangement, but I dare say, though they lived under the same roof, things were discussed because truth was being sought. Now, that, as you said, that's a whole other circumstance. But Jehoshaphat here has become an ally. They're fighting on the same side, fighting against the same enemy. And what about one's faith in God and one's faith in Balaam? What do you do with that? Yeah. Yeah. That kind of makes us make a choice, doesn't it? All right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, what I want to call to your attention now, to as you prepare for our next studies and read ahead, look for the impact that that has on Jehoshaphat's son. You know, sometimes our alliance with the enemy, maybe we withstand it. But what happens in the next generation? All right? Now we're going to look at that when... Yeah. We see that with Manasseh, don't we? Mm-hmm. Down the pike, Manasseh was good, a good king for a while, and bad. And then what happened? He wanted to be good again, but we find that it's too late. The people don't turn around. They've already following his, are already following his bad example. And so we'll have occasion to talk about that. Yes. That's right. And you know, it's interesting. You'd bring us back to the text with that very point, because as you look in chapter 19 of 2 Chronicles, you'll note beginning in verse 5, it tells us that Jehoshaphat is the he identified there. He set judges in the land throughout all the fortified cities of Judah, city by city, and said to the judges, "Consider what ye do, for ye judge not for man, but for Jehovah, and he is with you in judgment. Now therefore, let the fear of Jehovah be upon you, take heed and do it, for there is no iniquity with Jehovah our God, nor respect of persons, nor taking of bribes." And note that God don't make deals. God is not a respecter of persons. So Jehoshaphat calls upon these judges to judge righteously. You do it right. Well, is there any application of that to Jehoshaphat? Well, yeah, let's look further in verse 8, it says. "Moreover, in Jerusalem did Jehoshaphat set of the Levites and the priests and of the heads of the fathers' houses of Israel for the judgment of Jehovah and for controversies. And they returned to Jerusalem, and he charged them, saying, Thus shall ye do in the fear of Jehovah faithfully and with a perfect heart." Now listen carefully. He said, "And whensoever any controversy shall come to you from your brethren that dwell in their cities, between blood and blood, between law and commandments, statutes and ordinances, ye shall warn them that they be not guilty toward Jehovah. And so wrath come upon you and upon your brethren, this do, and ye shall not be guilty." Now let's pause right there. What's Jehoshaphat the king charged these judges with doing? And the priest, as we see, their responsibility of teaching. All right, you've got to do things right. Now many times we only get one time to do it right. And if we don't, then what happens? There are consequences. Now we're going to see that Jehoshaphat, though he is for the most part praised, you'll see in chapter 19, verse 3, for example. But we see that Jehoshaphat, though for the most part he is praised, he made friendships or alliances with people that he ought not to have. And that created a very serious problem. Now, if you'll turn back to the account of the kings in 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings chapter 3. Beginning in verse 4. 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 4. It says, "Now Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheep master, and he rendered unto the king of Israel the wool of 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams." Now let's identify our characters. Who's the king of Israel during this period of time? Jehoram. Now we've not talked about this Jehoram. This particular Jehoram you can identify as the king of Israel. You'll see that further in chapter 3, verse 1. "Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to rule over Israel in Samaria." This Jehoram was king of the northern 10 tribes, king in Israel, son of Ahab. Now, during this time, Mesha, the king of Moab, offers 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with their wool. Is that going to be kind of an expensive gift? Yep. In verse 5 it says, "But it came to pass when Ahab was dead and the king of Moab rebelled," or that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. Now what's Moab doing during the reign of Jehoram? Don't want to pay all this tribute. Don't want to give all these things to you. And so in verse 7, it says, "And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, The king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses. And he said, Which way shall we go up? And he answered, The way of the wilderness of Edom. And the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom." Now look at the alliance that's formed. You've got the northern 10 tribes, the southern 2 tribes, and we've got the Edomites, the king of Edom. Who are the Edomites? What's their pedigree? All right. Back to Esau. All right. So that takes us back to the wrong fork of the tree. Now, in verse 9, the thought continues. They went for 7 days, and there was no water for the host, nor for the beast that followed them. You see this alliance of Ahab, Jehoshaphat, and the king of Moab is beginning to have problems. You've got a lot of men and a lot of cattle, or a lot of beasts, I should say horses and perhaps camels and so forth that are making this trip. And there's no water. I often compare that, and every time nearly I go out to Jawbone Canyon, I say, how would you like to have several thousand or maybe 2 to 3 million people to provide for in a place like this? Now, if you're out there just 1 or 2 people, you might be able to find a spring, find some water, or find something to eat, shoot a jackrabbit or something. But what are you going to do with all this mass of people? Don't you think that Jehoshaphat, Ahab, and the king of Moab got this same problem when they're out here with all these people and all these animals and there's no water? What do you do? Well, we got a problem. You'll note in verse 11 it says, Jehoshaphat said, is there not here a prophet of Jehovah that we may inquire of Jehovah by him? Now, Jehoshaphat, he wants to talk to the prophets. You'll see that repeatedly. What do the prophets have to say? And who's the prophet during this period? Elisha, the successor, as it were, of Elijah. Elisha. And you'll notice that he is here, verse 11 tells us, and it tells us that he poured water upon the hands of Elijah, describing now Elisha. And Jehoshaphat said, the word of Jehovah is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, what have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father. Flag goes up. You see, king of Israel is Jehoram, the son of Ahab, who has formed this alliance with Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom. And Elisha says to the king of Israel, what are you doing here? How are we doing on time, Chris or Randy? You all time for the first bell or the second bell? First one? Okay. All right. Thank you, Chris. I was not watching that very closely. So the prophet Elisha says to the king of Israel, why don't you go to the prophets that advised Ahab? I don't have anything to do with you. And what about the Moabites? Do you have anything to do with them? No. But Elisha in verse 14 said, as Jehovah of hosts liveth before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. What's he saying to him? That's right. And any good thing that I have to say, I'll say for the benefit of Jehoshaphat. The rest of you, I'm not even interested in acknowledging your existence. Now, what's going to happen? He said, bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of Jehovah came upon him. And he said, thus saith Jehovah, make this valley full of trenches. For thus saith Jehovah, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water, and ye shall drink, both ye and your cattle and your beast. And this is but a light thing in the sight of Jehovah. He will also deliver the Moabites into your hand. Now, let's pause right here and talk a little bit. Where did this water come from? All right, did it come a great big dark cloud and rain and fill up the valley? No. Pardon me? They had to work for it. It tells us they had to dig trenches. But where did the water come from? Carolyn said it came from God. Yes. That is true. That's right. And it tells us that the whole country was filled with water. It was filled with water. Now, when the Moabites came, and what do they see when they look upon the army of Israel? Actually, when they see all this water. To them, they think it's blood. And what conclusion do they come to? You've got 3 kings leading 3 separate armies. Yeah, Carolyn, what do they think's happening? All right, We've got the king of Israel and the king of Judah and the king of Edom, and they've clashed, and so they battle with each other, and the whole valley is running full of blood. So all we need to do is just pack up and go home. Is that how it turned out? They went for the spoils, yes. And instead of gathering up the spoils in a sea of blood, what do they find? Three armies. That's right. Ready to attack them. And you'll note in verse 26, it says, "And when the king of Moab saw that the battle was too sore for him, he took with him 700 men that drew sword to break through unto the king of Edom. But they could not. Then he took his eldest son that should have reigned in his stead and offered him for a burnt offering upon the wall. And there was great wrath against Israel, and they departed from him and returned to their own land." He took his son and offered him as a sacrifice. Worship to an idol, you see, thinking he could find some strength in the idol, some deliverance from the idol. The idol couldn't provide any deliverance. What happened to the king of Moab? What happened to this engagement? Well, it appears he got away. That's right. Now, beginning in chapter 4, I'm going to make this kind of an assignment, Randy, if you would have the time to work on this assignment. Beginning in chapter 4, we see the beginning of several miracles that Elisha performed. And we want to identify what they were. Now keep in mind, our study is not necessarily to discuss at great length all the things that the prophets did, but they have a part in this history and geography. We want to follow more prominently the discussion of the kings, what happened with the kings and the nations, and see how that the borders of the nations were moved. But just a good, interesting study, what miracles did Elisha perform? Okay, then we'll get back to talking about Jehoshaphat. And then I want you to give some serious consideration to the kings. Not suggesting that you haven't been giving serious consideration to other things, but I want you to see this chart very quickly while the class is coming out. And here we see the kings of the southern kingdom. And we're going to look at this in greater detail. Here's the kings of the northern kingdom. And we know that Ahab had three children, Athaliah, Jehoram, and Ahaziah. Now, I want to call to your attention the color coding I've tried to put on here. Jehoshaphat has a son named Jehoram. Ahab has a son named Jehoram. Jehoram has a son named Ahaziah. Ahab has a son named Ahaziah. And when we're studying through this period, we want to be real careful to identify in the text which man we're talking about, because we know that Jehoram married Athaliah and became son-in-law to Ahab, which means he has a brother-in-law by the same name, and then they had a child and named him by the same name, Ahaziah. And this gets kind of kinky through this period of time to follow in the text and know exactly who you're talking about. Now, as if that's not enough, this man, Ahaziah, is also called in 2 Chronicles 21, Jehoahaz. So as you're studying the text, be careful to identify the man. Know who you're talking about, who his daddy was, what kingdom he's king in. Because the text just makes all kinds of more sense when you know who the king is. Okay?